Fibeke,
the podcast for London lovers, Anglophiles and critical believers. RevLab. Guten Tag, liebe Podcast-Community, und willkommen zu einer neuen Episode von More Tea Vicar, der Podcast für London-Liebhaberinnen, Menschenfreunde, Glaubensinteressierte und Geschichtsfans direkt aus der britischen Hauptstadt. Ich bin Carla Maurer, Pfarrerin an der Schweizer Kirche in London, und ich rede mit Menschen, die im Grossstadtdschungel leben und überleben. Mein heutiger Gast ist ein Mann, der zum Thema Überleben in London ganz viel zu sagen hat. Ich habe Andy vor über 5 Jahren kennengelernt. Er ist eines Tages an der Kirche vorbeigelaufen, gewundert, weil die Kirchentüren, die sonst immer zu waren, plötzlich offen waren. Zusammen mit seinem Freund Sam ist er dann fast jeden Tag zurückgekommen für eine Tasse Tee oder ein Gespräch, und irgendwann hat man ihn von der Schweizer Kirche gar nicht mehr wegdenken. 30 Jahre lang sind die Strassen und Tausendgänge von London am Ende sein Zuhause gewesen. Seit einem Jahr lebt er zuerst mal in seiner eigenen Wohnung. Er hat sich mittlerweile seinen Traum von 2 Fotoausstellungen und von einer Modeschau mit Charity-Kleidern, also Secondhand-Kleidern, erfüllt. Er ist auch der Sigrist in der Schweizer Kirche, und er ist mit seiner eloquenten und gewinnenden Art ein Botschafter für die Obdachlosen. Zu seinen Facebook-Freunden zählen mittlerweile viele Schweizer Jugendliche und Pfarrpersonen, Gruppen, die bei uns in der Kirche sind zu Gast waren und vom Andy aus erster Hand gehört haben, wie das eigentlich ist, obdachlos zu sein. Seit ich den Andy kennengelernt habe, hat das Wort «Daheim» oder «Heimat» für mich nochmal eine andere Bedeutung bekommen. Häufig sagt man ja, daheim ist dort, wo die Lieblingsmenschen sind. Die Menschen, die am nächsten stehen, die man am liebsten hat. Daheim ist aber noch viel mehr als das. Daheim für mich ist dort, wo ich die Türen hinter mir zutun kann, wo ich mich in die gemütlichen Kleider fläzen kann, die Füße auf den Tisch legen, wo ich im Winter die Heizung auftrüllen kann, den Kühlschrank füllen und warm duschen. Daheim ist, wo ich mir immer wieder eine Tasse Tee machen kann. Daheim ist ein sicherer, warmer Ort, wo mich niemand blöd anschaut. Und so einen Ort zu haben, ist für viele Menschen gar nicht selbstverständlich. Laut den aktuellen Statistiken sind im Moment um die 170'000 Menschen in London obdachlos. Und es werden Jahr für Jahr mehr. Kürzungen im Sozialwesen, prekäre Arbeitsbedingungen, Familienkrise, Flucht, Arbeitslosigkeit und auch ein schwacher Mieterschutz, das sind alles Gründe, warum Menschen obdachlos werden. Und wenn man mal auf der Strasse gelandet ist, ist es fast unmöglich, wieder wegzukommen. Der Andy hat es geschafft. Mit 19 ist er von daheim weggerannt, weil es mit seinen Eltern gar nicht mehr gegangen ist. Er hat sich nach London durchgeschlagen, wo er mit seinem letzten Geld zuerst noch in Hostels übernachtet hat und seine Freiheit genossen hat. Irgendwann ist ihm aber das Geld ausgegangen. Zu seinen Eltern zurückgehen, das ist für ihn gar nicht in Frage gekommen. Und so hat er dann seine erste Nacht im Freien verbracht. Und zwar unter einer Brücke in einem Skateboardpark am Südufer der Themse. Aus einer Nacht sind Wochen, dann Monate, dann Jahre geworden. Heute ist der Andy Mitte 50 und schaut zurück auf eine bewegte Geschichte mit Hochs und Tiefs. Als ich ihn kennengelernt habe, hat Andy gesagt, dass die Obdachlosigkeit seine Wahl ist und dass er es gar nicht anders will. Aber dann, über die Jahre, hat sich die Einstellung langsam geändert. Er sagt, der Grund dafür ist, dass er Leute kennengelernt von dieser wohlhabenderen, von dieser Welt, mit wo die Leute ein Zuhause haben, die ihm nicht nur leere Versprechungen gemacht haben, sondern wo ihm in erster Linie einfach einmal Freunde auf Augenhöhe sind gsi, wo seinen Wert erkannt haben und wo ihn zu nichts gedrängt haben. Zuerst in der Schweizer Kirche, dann aber auch an anderen Orten. Ich finde, der Andy hat seinen Lebenswandel zum grossen Teil sich selber zu verdanken. Er hat sich auf die neuen Beziehungen eingelassen. Er ist durch jede Tür durchgelaufen, die man ihm aufgemacht hat. Er hat sich mit sich selber auseinandergesetzt und hat seine Einstellung zum Leben hinterfragt und geändert. Ich kenne wenig Menschen, die den Mut zu so radikalen Veränderungen haben. Mit dem Andy habe ich über Gott und die Welt geredet, und zwar im Pub, wie es sich gehört.
I'm with Andy Pulfreman today, who lived in London Street for nearly 30 years and most of the time sleeping rough. And now I'm with Andy at one of our favorite pubs, the Cross Keys, a beautiful pub in Covent Garden near the Swiss Church. I think it's the closest pub to the Swiss Church, isn't it, Andy?
Second closest pub. Oh. There's one right across the road.
Oh, that's right, yeah. It's not as good, though.
But we don't class that as a good pub.
No, it's not a proper boozer.
The Cross Keys in Endell Street, traditional English pub.
Exactly. Has like a good thick carpet, no music playing.
No music playing. Lots of things to look at on the walls, and good beer.
We're standing outside. You can hear some traffic going on, but it shouldn't be as busy as usual because we're still kind of somehow in Corona time, so central London is not too busy. So many of our listeners in Switzerland, they know London as tourists. They know the glitzy parts of London. Mm. Now, you have lived in London's streets for most of your life, really. What is your perspective on London?
I have a love-hate relationship with London. Sometimes I love it and I would never move away. Other times I want to leave, but I have left before many years ago, but it draws me back. I still think it's the best city in the world for all its problems. And it's just, I don't know, especially around this area, Covent Garden, I buzz off the area, the people. You've got everything, you've got locals, you've got tourists, you've got every nationality you can think of. It's just a great place to be. Come and visit.
Yeah. But London must be like, would you say there are like kind of subcultures or like is the society, is it one big society or is the society kind of split?
I think we've got lots of different societies within society, especially in London. You've got every sort of social caste you can think of, from homeless guys to rich oligarchs and everything in between. When people say, especially the government have said we're a classless society, to me there's nothing further from the truth. We have so many classes, especially in this area. We have everything. We have guys sleeping in doorways, we have multimillionaires, we have council housing, we have private flats, you know, shops and everything. And Covent Garden to me is London. It's everything that's in Covent Garden you will find everywhere else in London.
So Andy's London, how would you describe Andy's London?
At the moment, last few years, great, fantastic. I love it, you know. And I just really enjoy walking around London. You know, I know most of it very well over the 30 years I spent walking around it. It makes me feel good, especially when the weather's nice and you can just walk. And what a lot of people forget to do is to look up. I mean, my last exhibition was looking down. The next one might be looking up, because above the shop fronts, there's some amazing architecture that people don't see. All they see is the front of the shop, but above it, some beautiful buildings.
And you said so in the past few years you really enjoyed it. That kind of implies you have not always enjoyed London. What is the worst that London has thrown at you?
Being set on fire by the guys when I was homeless. You know, I'll never ever forget that. And that was, how they could do that to another human being. And these were respectable businessmen. You know, just had too much wine. And
so you were sleeping, what, in a square?
I was in a doorway across from a wine bar. And I heard the guys coming across, so I pretended I was asleep, so they'd leave me alone. But they thought it'd be funny to set fire to my sleeping bag while I was in it. Yeah, quite scary. Some colourful language.
Well, fair enough, I would say.
Yeah, but I felt justified in that.
I'd say that deserves a zip of beer. Yeah. Now we can't really cheer because they're plastic cups, but let's try.
Tink.
Tink. Well, that's it. You've got the nice... Nice Guinness. I've got
Pale Ale. Yeah,
Gamma Rye, one of my favourite beers, actually.
Oh, I'm very limited in my drink. I drink Guinness and nothing else, pretty much.
Yeah.
But again, going back to the bad times in London, to be honest, even though I was homeless, maybe it's just I'm looking back differently now than when it was actually happening. But there weren't that many bad times. I was homeless, yeah, but each day was taken up by getting through each day. So you didn't have time to feel down or sorry for yourself. And it was where to go to get a shower, where to go to get clean clothes, where to get food. So you were busy all the time, just walking and...
It's your life. Well, it's just the life you know.
It's a life I know. I fully expected to die on the streets.
We have met about 5 years ago, I think.
Yeah, it's just over 5 years now, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it started with like a cup of teas and chats, and then chats led to friendship, and now we've been knowing each other for a long time. And
I consider you one of my dearest friends, to be quite honest.
Well, yeah, I really consider you one of my dearest friends, and certainly someone who has taught me an awful lot about life.
And the same with me.
I don't know what I can teach you about life, but
just the friendship that people give to each other is. I can't think of anything better. I really can't. I haven't got many true friends, and the ones I've met the last few years have just been amazing people, and I feel very humble, I really do. It's last 5 years has been a roller coaster of huge emotions for me. It really has.
What can you describe that roller coaster?
As you know, I still suffer with depression at times and whatever, but I've been given the chance to do things I never thought I could do. I've had photo exhibitions, I've had a fashion show. Homeless guys don't do these things, and I did, and I'm really proud of them. It gave me the kick I needed to rejoin society, because you are detached from it as a homeless person. And now I feel fully part of society. Now, today I paid an electric bill. That hurt, by the way, I must admit. That really hurt, but I had to pay it.
How did that make you feel, paying your bills?
Actually, it made me feel grown up. I'm 55, it was probably the first bill I've ever paid. But it made me feel grown up and responsible. You know, it felt really strange. You know, transferring money out of my account into this account, and what most people take for normal, it was a novelty for me.
And what was that? So you moved into your really proper first own flat about just over a year ago, I think.
It's just under a year ago. Yeah, December last year.
So you mentioned paying bills. What were the other things? So once you were away from the streets and into like housed living, what other surprises other than paying bills did you meet?
How well you can sleep. Because when you're homeless, when you're in the doorway, never saying you sleep with one eye open. Anything wakes you up, you know, any noise, cause just in case there's danger. Now, I still don't get many hours sleep, but I get good sleep. And I can actually lie in bed and get up when I want to. And that's a huge thing for me, you know. When you're homeless, you have to be out of the doorway by a certain time because we're going to open the shops or the restaurants or whatever.
And then, So when you sleep in the doorway, people kind of tolerate you being there, but you have to adhere to certain rules.
I mean, I met some great people that owned a lot of the doorways I slept in. I was very lucky. And as long as you keep it clean and you've gone before they go into the shop and have to open up sort of thing, many of them used to buy me cups of tea and things like that.
So they know you're there?
Yeah, a lot of them knew I was there, So, and some of them didn't, I must admit, and that's why you have to be away early in the morning to keep your spot.
So how long do you keep your spot until someone else can move into your doorway?
Well, it was normally, the unwritten rule was 4 or 5 days. If you'd not been back there for 4 or 5 nights, then someone else, that became a vacant spot. You know, I was never away for more than two,
That means, is it like a community of rough sleepers, and you know from each other where you are staying, in which doorway?
Yeah, you know where each other sleeps and whatever, yeah. So, if you're not there for like 4 or 5 nights, that means you've gone to another place and someone else can have your spot. And it's a bit like an estate agent. Right. if I'd found a new doorway, I would tell a friend, oh, I'm leaving that one, that's a good one to stay in and whatever, like, you know.
How do you learn these rules? Because I imagine, like, if you end up living in the streets, you don't know anything about that. You're probably just shell-shocked.
Oh, I didn't at first. I was terrified at first. But over the years, you just get to know, you know, you meet other homeless people who give you advice. I remember the first guy I met was quite an elderly gentleman, and he could tell I was new to the street. He knew I was terrified. He just took me to one side and told me where to go to get tea in the morning, to get clean clothes, to get a shower. And then the more you learn, the more you pass on to other homeless guys.
You know, so you kind of take new people under your wing.
Yeah. A very good friend of mine, Sam, I've known him about 7-8 years now, and he's a very good friend of mine. And he was green as grass when he came on the street. He didn't have a clue. Now he passes so much information on to other people because I've passed it on to him, and that's what we do.
So it's got a strong community.
There is a very strong sense of community amongst the homeless.
What did he teach you about friendship?
when you're homeless, friendships are accelerated a lot more than making a normal friendship with someone, because you have to trust in them, you have to believe in them, because you've got no one otherwise. Yeah. But friendships definitely get accelerated. You know, you do get a bond. I mean, I'll always talk to the guys I was on the street with, and I've been lucky. I got a lovely home in Bayswater. Very nice area.
Nice area, for those who don't know it. Just north of Hyde Park, that's where Mr. Pufferman now lives.
Hyde Park is on my doorstep. I'm a very lucky man.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's like a private garden.
It's not too shabby. Yeah.
Good for lockdown situations.
It was actually, yes. It was. I used to go and sit in the park. It's like 6 a.m. when it was coming light, and just, even that time Hyde Park's normally busy with dog walkers and joggers. And I just had this vast expanse, there's no one else there. It was beautiful, to be honest. Some good came out of lockdown.
Discovered Hyde Park.
I discovered Hyde Park, got some great photographs.
You also talk quite positively. You're not only looking back as in a very negative light. Are there things you miss about life in the streets?
I do miss chatting to the lads every day. There used to be a regular charity that came out in the morning at 7 for the first cup of tea, and we'd all congregate there, and I just used to look round, and what one cup of tea could mean to someone is unbelievable. You could see how much they appreciated it, and I did myself, and I missed chatting and finding out what they were up to. You know, through the church I keep in touch with a lot of the guys, and I'll never forget them, because I'm no different to them and they're no different to me. You know, they're still part of our society. And there's some great talent amongst the homeless, some fantastic artists, painters, guitarists, you know, poets, philosophers, you know.
So you don't meet people as easily now? Is that fair to say? Although, I mean, you still come, whenever I see you, you've met someone famous, yeah, or you just...
I'm very lucky.
Always meet people.
Because of my fashion sense, I tend to attract attention. So people always talk to me.
They talk to you, or do you talk to them?
They come talking to me for, I love your hat, or I love your coat. And then we get talking, you know. Like I say,
so is it one of your life lessons, if you want to meet more people, just like dress well and wear some like outstanding...
It wasn't as much, I didn't do it for that reason. I like to dress as well as I can because it makes me feel good. And that attracted attention was a bonus for me. You know,
you did that anyway, but like someone who's like, I want to go out, I want to chat to people much more, just buy a crazy hat or...
It helps.
Some crazy...
It helps if you stick out a little bit, like, you know, if you stick out from the crowd, it definitely helps.
Okay, well, try it out. So, Swiss Church, what does the Swiss Church mean to you?
Swiss Church is my special place, you know, it really is. That was the first place where I felt my life was turning around, you know, when I first discovered the place. And then everything started happening at the same time. I met other people at the same time and who helped me out a lot. And made me realise I could do something with my life. And it's been a fantastic ride the last few years. And even the church itself, a lot of homeless guys use churches, and I wouldn't go into a lot of them because I didn't feel I belonged there. Because they were like these... the architecture of them and everything, it just wasn't for me. You know, I felt I shouldn't be in here. The Swiss church, I could sit in there all day on my own and be happy.
Just the building as well.
The building itself, I just love the simplicity of it. It's so beautiful. Mm. It really is. And I can go in there feeling quite low and go in on my own and I just feel my spirits lifting. You know, it's just a wonderful place to be. So if you ever come to London, you must come and visit the Swiss church.
It's quite amazing what, like, just beauty can... triggering you and that.
That's
a
funny.
Beautiful building.
That's actually a very good point, because the last 5 years I see so much more beauty than I used to. Because maybe it's because I'm in a better frame of mind and my life's a lot better, maybe. I see beauty in a lot of things now, you know. And I've got a love of architecture.
But you also made quite good friends with some people at the Swiss Church from the congregation. How did that, like? Because I remember when we opened the church and gave out like coffee for homeless people and so on. Obviously, it was a bit. Might have been felt by some of our congregation members a little bit as an invasion of the space, and they might have been a bit hesitant to meet you, but how has that developed
I can fully understand that, because it's normal when non-homeless people meet up, because they don't know how to treat them, and they are scared sometimes. The relationship I've got with the congregation now is, I call them my ladies, and I do love them to bits. And while I was ill recently, they were phoning me up and making sure I was okay. And it is very humbling. I still get a little bit embarrassed in front of them at times.
Why?
You know, because they're proper ladies, and I'm just an oik. You know. They are a special bunch. They really are.
And then it's not only the kind of the ladies from the church, but you also have been talking to teenagers from Switzerland who came to, not just teenagers, young people as well, who came to visit London with groups or with confirmation classes. Yeah. What experience was that?
I really enjoy talking to the youngsters. It's probably one of the best things I ever got involved with. A lot of them have experienced homelessness, never met a homeless person. And I think, of all the things I've done in the last 5 years, what I'm proudest of most is changing people's perception of homeless people. And I think I do that with a lot of the youngsters, because they come to London and they see homeless guys everywhere. They don't know how to approach them, and I talk to them. It makes me feel young as well.
Yeah, and I think it's also quite particular to have groups from Switzerland, but because the homeless situation is not comparable in Switzerland, it's much less, the kind of, also the social system is stronger, so I think it's even for young people from Switzerland. We usually, when we have these talks, we ask the teenagers what strikes them most about London, and most of them would mention
homelessness. Yeah.
Well, because you see it everywhere you go.
Unfortunately, you see it everywhere. I mean, my Facebook friends, I've got so many Swiss teenagers on there, it's unbelievable. And I'm actually quite proud of the fact, because I do keep in touch with quite a lot of them, you know, and it's really nice.
You left home at the age of 19?
19,
a family breakdown. What do you? I know that always in these talks, that I think that really leaves kind of a mark with these young people. What advice do you give them?
I made a lot of mistakes at that age. I was very stubborn, bloody-minded, wouldn't listen to advice from my parents. I'm not saying they gave all good advice, but the majority of it was. And I should have listened, and my life would have been a lot different. But maybe I had to go through what I went through to be who I am now. You know, I think that played a big part in it, to be honest. But I would say to the youngsters, the most important thing I'll ever say to anyone, please get an education. You know, get as much education as you can, because it will improve your life so much. I'm only just starting to get one now, the last 5 years, and it's wonderful. You know, I never read a book at school. I wouldn't read. When I was homeless, you read everything. You learn to, because it passes time, so you learn. You learn about authors, you learn so much. I wouldn't recommend it as a way of getting an education, but it worked for me. Mm. You know.
And what advice would you give to anyone, to adults, to the world?
Get help before it's too late. I didn't do that, you know. Talk to people, tell them how you're feeling, what your problems are. I still find it difficult at times. I don't with you, because you make me promise to do things and I have to do them.
You know, don't get away with it.
Basically just tell people how you're feeling. There is help for people, like, you know.
I think that's a really good point. I think that's so often the case when we face difficult situations in life, that we just ask for help too late. And then once you're in this vicious circle, anything like financial, emotional, in your relationship, in your work, once you're too low, the lower you fall, or the more you're in this vicious circle, the more difficult it becomes to ask for help.
Oh, definitely. I mean, my mental health has improved so much over the last 5 years. Since life was getting better, you know. I mean, I would go weeks sometimes without talking to anyone. I was just in my own little world, a downward spiral sort of thing, you know. And people can't see it, because it's not like a broken leg. It's in your head where you're hurting, and it's just as painful, if not worse. And the last few years, the people I've met, I do open up to them. And again, it's one of the best things I could ever do, tell people how I'm feeling. If someone says, "Hey, up Andy, how are you?" I say, "Do you really want to know?"
Good point. Yeah, especially I think it's something you just say.
Well,
it's part of the greeting. Oh,
that's
how are
it.
You?
Yeah.
Do you mean it?
Yeah.
Are you just saying this? Yeah. And I think what I've learned from you is, of course, my perception of homeless people has completely changed. And I think what I really learned, not just from you, but also like from other people coming to the church for. Breakfast is that everyone has a different kind of stories, and the stories I've heard nothing. It's just I don't even know if I've ever imagined how you you become homeless or what it does with you. And then every story is so different, and I think really helped me, not just for homeless people, but in general in life, to see people as an individual and to realize like everyone has their own story and everyone has an interesting story to tell. But actually, what I just really admire in you is your resilience. You know, you always say like that you got so much support from the Swiss Church,
but definitely.
I think you took the opportunities as they came along, and I don't know if I've ever met anyone like you.
You have fire in you.
You just go with it.
Yeah, well, I wish I would have some of that. That's in my personality, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so, but you've seen when I get stressed out at times and things, and people have a perception of homeless people as being either drug addicts or alcoholics. I mean, some of them are, yes, but they weren't when they became homeless. They turned to drink or drugs to escape the monotony of it, and then that gets them in the vicious circle of drugs again, like, you know. And it's, I mean, I was lucky. I drank more than was good for me. Probably still do, to be quite honest. But it was because even to sleep, I would drink heavily just to sleep. And luckily, I never did the drugs, because I think if I'd have tried that, I probably wouldn't be here now, you know. And, I actually did try and take my own life many, many years ago. And I don't know whether it was a genuine attempt or a cry for help, and I really don't, but something I'm not very proud I did. And luckily, I'm still here to tell the tale.
Yeah. You know. If you think back of that moment when you were trying to take your life, you, Andy, today, what would you tell Andy then?
Again, it would be open up to people, tell people how you're feeling. Because I didn't tell anyone, I just went off. I had two bottles of vodka and a load of pills, and I just sat drinking the vodka, popping the pills, and hoping I'd go to sleep and not wake up. That was the plan. And a dog found me. And then his owner came looking for the dog, and I was unconscious. Yeah, so. Yeah. I love that dog.
Yeah. You know? What was its name?
I don't know. I never found out, actually. Never found out. You know.
Last but not least, the question that every vicar would ask.
I think I know what's coming. Do I believe in God?
Yes.
I believe, God, I never know what to say with this one. I don't believe there's a little man with a grey beard sat on a cloud. I don't know, but there is something somewhere, because I've been looked after. Someone wouldn't let me die. Someone had plans for me, or something had plans for me, the universe or whatever, I don't know. But there's definitely someone or something responsible. And, I think we'd enjoy a pint together if we ever met.
And does faith play any role in life in the streets? Is that anything?
Oh, it does with a lot of guys on the street. A lot of guys turn to God. And a lot of guys know a lot about the Bible. And there is a reason for some of them, because when you're in a police cell, you've allowed a Bible. So they would all take the Bible and read it to pass time. So a lot of homeless guys are very well versed on the Bible. And so whether they take it in or what, I don't know. But, you know, not that I was ever, well, a couple of times in a police cell, but not too many. So, yeah.
That is indeed very interesting. Never thought about that, but yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, like, the Bible is a book you get in quite a few places you can get for free. Like, if you have missionary Christian groups, they would give out Bibles in the streets.
Yeah, I mean, I used to read anything I could get my hands on. And a lot of the guys, it's like a little library. When you finish with a book, you pass it on to your friend and he'll give you one he was reading and things like that, you know. And if you couldn't get a book, the flyers they hand out. I mean, homeless guys can tell you the price of every pizza in London. You know, and things like that.
You know. Well, it's important to know.
It is. Yeah. Two for one. We're always good with them.
Any other wisdom you would like to share?
It really, just be yourself. Because I wasn't for many, many years. I was lying to myself about who I was. You know. Now, most of the time, I love being me. And I don't think you can ask for more than that. If you enjoy being yourself, you know, it's a great way to be. And like I say, just talk to people, open up. Don't keep anything in. That stopped me changing my life for a long, long time. It really did. And I'll never forget being homeless, and I'll never leave it fully, because I still know guys that are homeless now, and I can't leave it behind. It was a big part of my life, but I'm moving upwards and things are getting better all the time, and got lots more plans and things to do, and hopefully a few events at the Swiss Church.
Yeah, and I think one of the next big projects, once the quarantine measures are over, a trip to Switzerland.
Oh, you know.
Long overdue.
Long overdue. But
planned a few times.
Yeah. Well, I must tell you, as you know, Carla, I am terrified of flying. I shake when I start thinking about it, but I'm gonna overcome it. I am going to go to Switzerland.
Hey, put me on the train. That's not an excuse.
No, I'm going to fly. I've got to beat this.
Okay.
I've got to beat
it. So you're determined to get there by plane?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I may go on the train in the end, but I will be in Switzerland at some point because I've got so many people I want to see now. I don't know. It's quite strange. I feel a little bit Swiss, if that makes sense. I really do, because the people I've met, you know, and the things they've told me, and when I meet the groups from different parts of Switzerland and get to know all the towns and cities and what they're like, and I want to go to St. Gallen, you know, or I want to go to Rapperswil. Is it Rapperswil?
Yeah,
Yarnet, you
Rapperswil.
Know?
Yeah.
I want to go to all
Shout
these places.
Shout out to Cyril and his confirmation class.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, because he always brings me cigarettes.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He does, yeah. And you get a lot of chocolate. But maybe we have to say, if you ever come with a confirmation class, don't bring chocolate.
Don't bring
because
chocolate.
Bring Parisian cigarettes.
Yes.
We should probably not promote that in the podcast, but I mean, that's what...
Probably not, but that's what I am, you know.
Yeah. Or some local beers.
Oh, yes.
I know, you don't drink any beer other than Guinness.
I do like the Swiss beer, actually, that we have at the Swiss
Okay, show. Okay.
And the wine, that wine is beautiful.
Right, okay. So here you go.
In moderation, obviously.
Of course, always in moderation. Well, okay, thanks for... talking to me, and cheers. And we do
cheers.
That again.
And
clink.
More tea, Vicar.
More tea, Vicar.
Im Nachhinein an das Gespräch habe ich mit dem Andy mal noch darüber geredet, was ich von ihm gelernt habe. Und das sind vor allem zwei Sachen. Erstens habe ich gelernt, dass jeder Mensch seine ganz eigene Geschichte hat. Aber das Erste, was wir wahrnehmen, wenn wir jemandem begegnen, immer zuerst mal unsere eigenen Vorurteile und Einschätzungen sind. Und die müssen wir immer wieder überwinden. Und immer wieder neu nach dem Mensch fragen, der da wirklich vor uns steht, hinter unseren Vorurteilen versteckt. Und zweitens habe ich vom Andy gelernt, verspreche nie etwas, das du nicht halten kannst. Und vor allem nicht Menschen, die besonders verletzlich und hilfsbedürftig sind. Vertrauen und Beständigkeit in der Beziehung führen 100-mal weiter als leere Versprechungen. Und mein Gesprächsgast in der nächsten Episode ist Kate. Sie ist Theatermacherin und grabt für ihre Produktionen vergessene Geschichten und Geschichten aus, die sie fürs Publikum erfahrbar macht. Vor 3 Jahren hat sie ein Stück Frauengeschichte ausgegraben, wo genau gegenüber von der Schweizer Kirche während dem Ersten Weltkrieg stattgefunden hat. Hört rein. Bis dann. RevLab.